Now it's time for the opinion page. As Congress continues to wrestle with health care, one of the hottest areas of debate is tort reform. Many argue that fear of ruinous lawsuits drives doctors to practice defensive medicine and order expensive tests, prescriptions, and procedures that really aren't necessary. Cap the payouts on lawsuits, they say, and health care will be cheaper, and because malpractice insurance rates would drop, it would be more widely available. In a piece on Salon.com, pediatrician Rahul Parikh disagreed. We'll hear his argument in just a moment. And we want to hear from the doctors in our audience today. How would tort reform change the way you practice medicine? Would it bring down costs? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Rahul Parikh is a physician in Walnut Creek, California, and joins us today from a studio at the Journalism School at the University of California at Berkeley. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
And you begin your piece by conceding that in this swine flu season, you are over-prescribing an expensive drug.
Yeah, my example isn't the most dramatic example of defensive medicine, and I think all of us agree that doctors do practice defensively. Certainly doctors in higher risk for lawsuit professions like obstetrics or emergency room physicians probably have more dramatic stories. But the question really is does defensive medicine really drive up the cost of healthcare? And according to several studies, including those done by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan group, as we know, no, the answer is no, it does not.
Nevertheless, your patients are getting expensive prescriptions they probably don't need. Their healthcare costs went up.
Yeah, they did go up a little bit. As a pediatrician, like I said, I'm not a huge utilizer of expensive medicines. And thankfully, now that swine flu vaccine is a little more available, we're vaccinating more kids and hopefully keeping them from getting sick in the first place.
But a lot of the procedures that, as you point out rightly, doctors in other areas of specialty, we're talking about things like MRIs. Those are very expensive exams. Even surgical procedures that people don't need, all ordered by doctors for fear that if they don't order them, they're going to eventually be sued for not doing all they could.
Yeah, I mean, I think one example you can use is a CT scan. We do a lot more CT scans than probably are necessary in this country. And some of that's done defensively to look for things that maybe we want to confirm do or don't exist in a patient, an illness. But the question then becomes, is it safe to practice defensive medicine? And, you know, with CT scans in particular, you're exposing a patient to very high doses of radiation. And repeated scans, you know, over the long haul could increase the risk of cancer and other side effects of that radiation. So, it's not clear cut. And I think that defensive medicine down the line may have negative consequences for patients as well.
That's not what's at issue here. If there are fewer CT scans ordered, it will be less expensive.
Yes, that's correct. And to some degree, it will. But how much will that lower the overall cost of healthcare? And that question really and the answer to that suggests it won't make a big dent in the overall cost of healthcare.
How many, another impression that a lot of people have, you write in your piece, is that there are a lot of lawsuits and that doctors face huge liabilities.
Again, the number of lawsuits over the last 10 to 12 years has been stable, essentially, at about 15 suits per 100 doctors in this country, according to, again, the Congressional Budget Office. And so we're not seeing really an epidemic of lawsuits that you might be hearing about from some of the rhetoric in physicians groups and lobbyists. Probably the most significant, the most serious lawsuits are now being handled in the courts, the most significant injuries and damages, while other ones are going away.
Other ones are going away, presumably being settled.
Either settled or dismissed, yeah. But we don't have – I think the point is we don't have an epidemic of lawsuits in this country that you might think would suddenly – if we suddenly capped rewards or somehow found other reforms to curtail would suddenly drop healthcare costs. Overall, estimates are that malpractice costs overall account for probably less than 2% of overall healthcare costs.
Let me ask this, though. If the risk is negligible or just that minor, how come malpractice insurance rates keep going through the roof? There's no arguing that.
There have been three large malpractice crises in the last generation or so. One was in the 70s, one was in the mid-80s, and one was more recently in 2002. And the argument that physicians make is that there's a – or physicians groups make is that there's a large spike in lawsuits and there's an epidemic of lawsuits that drive up the risk of covering physician, when in fact that may be part of the issue. But really the main thing also is that insurance companies make money by investing insurance premiums. And when – investment markets are soft, as they were in those three eras. Profits drop, and then rates have to go up. And so there are many more factors other than just the risk of covering a physician in terms of what determines the price of malpractice.
So in other words, when the insurance companies get the premiums paid by every 100% of doctors, that's not put in escrow somewhere. They invest it, and it helps to make money.
Correct. And that's the nature of the insurance business.
So the insurance business, the structure of the insurance business, you're saying, is responsible for this spike in malpractice insurance rates.
Well, if you look at some of the data, that's correct. And so it's not just as simple as a doctor or a particular specialty of medicine is higher risk for being sued. It has more to there are many other factors involved.
Well, we want to hear from doctors in our audience today. How would tort reform change the way you practice medicine? Would it bring down health care costs? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our guest again is a pediatrician by the name of Rahul Parikh. He practices in Walnut Creek, California. His piece appeared in Salon on October 28th. I'm a doctor, so sue me. No, really. And we'll have a link to that on our webpage at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Let's get some callers on the line. And Timam joins us from Denver.
Yes, hello. Hi. Very, very, very nice to be on.
Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to comment. I'm a resident physician in family medicine. Just wanted to say thank God for primary care to your guest today. I think overall tort reform probably changed the way I practiced. As a primary care doc, I do end up doing a fair amount of defensive medicine. And more to the point, as somebody who's still in my training process, I actually feel that my education is affected very badly by it. It used to be that primary care docs were very, very good at basic exams. They were very good at diagnosing particular things. And a lot of the things that I would be diagnosing otherwise actually get farmed out to my specialist colleagues. Now, while I don't think this is necessarily always bad for the patient, I do believe it leads to, on occasion, increased risk, like you were discussing with the CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, I think it also leads to, really an imposition on my education to, have to work a lot harder to get experience at things that are probably treated otherwise.
For example?
Let's see. Let me come up with a good example here. So let's say I have a patient. They come in. And for my exam, I can really overall clinically rule out let's say they have abdominal pain, and I can, for my clinical exam, rule out the likelihood of something remarkably serious, such as, say, appendicitis or, a gallstone, that's stuck, things like that. At the same time, I look at the possibility of potentially missing something like that, even though the chances are very, very, very small based on my exam, and then running into a problem with a lawsuit down the line. Well, I will usually send that person for a radiological test for further rule out. Whereas in years past, when defensive medicine was less prevalent, we might have thought about diagnosing and treating those things without such.
So it does drive up costs somewhat, and if there were tort reform, you would not necessarily have to order that test that you didn't really think was necessary.
And I would tend to agree with that, yes.
All right, interesting. Timam, good luck with your studies.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye. Let's see if we go next to Michelle. Michelle with us in Baltimore.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Neil. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm a doctor, and my husband's a doctor as well. And I would say, without a doubt, that every single doctor who sees patients on a regular basis, every single day practices defensive medicine. There is no doubt about it. Every patient that comes in and complains of something that could be minor, but, maybe there's this very, very, very small chance of something else. Every single doctor is thinking about that and will order the expensive test, will order the referral to a specialist, will order the referral to the emergency room, just because they're worried about their own the threats of litigation. And then that referral then leads to a whole host of other unnecessary tests, because then that referral leads to
because they're playing defense
a subspecialist ordering their own set of tests. It is absolutely without a doubt the case that defensive medicine contributes hugely to the cost of medicine in this country.
Rahul Parikh?
Yeah, you know, the studies are actually interesting in that even as of early this year, they looked at, comparing states with and without tort reforms in terms of the cost of medicine, assuming that, states with tort reforms would have lower health care costs. And they did not, surprisingly.
I'd like to know what kind of tort reform you're talking about in those states. Is it just a limit on malpractice, or is it a complete change in the way the whole system is viewed? I think a doctor is afraid of being sued, whether they're going to be sued for $20 or $2 million. But the question is, are these cases going to be tried by a jury of inner-city people who sympathize more with patients than with the doctors, or are these cases going to be tried in front of professionals who understand the cases? I think, any data that you have, I completely, I can't possibly think applies to my practice or my husband's practice or what I'm seeing. Every doctor every day practices defensive medicine. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's ridiculous that it's not more of an issue in the healthcare litigation or healthcare legislation that's before Congress right now. It should be.
You're suggesting, Michelle,
absolutely major.
There's a difference between what practice might be like in Walnut Creek, California, and Baltimore, Maryland.
I don't know what practice is like in Walnut Creek, California. I can only comment on what practice is like in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. Might it be different, do you think, Dr. Parikh, in different areas?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's going to be differences in everything from population to the acuity of disease and a number of things. And I think, I agree with the caller that, there are lots of doctors who are practicing defensive medicine. There may be other reasons for defensive medicine other than just prevention of litigation, however. A 2004 report by the Justice Department suggested that some defensive medicine might actually be medicine to ordering tests to, bill for in terms of billing and compensation for physicians. I mean, there are a lot of other reasons potentially that.
There's been some investigation of doctors who have associated radiological services that they might be saying, well, you best send you for another set of x-rays.
Right,
that's
right.
Not defensive medicine, that's
no,
a different issue.
That's
I'm
a different
talking
issue.
About defensive medicine.
Yeah.
It is practiced every day, and it runs up the cost. You could insure the entire United States of America with the money you would save from defensive medicine being taken away.
Okay, Michelle, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're talking about tort reform and health care. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Elliot. Elliot calling from Modesto, California.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Elliot. Go ahead.
I just wanted to relate some of my experience. I've been what I call a victim of frivolous medical malpractice lawsuits in the past 5 years, not once, but twice, unfortunately. Both suits were dropped without any payment from any doctor just because they had no merit. And it is pretty much permanently scarred my practice patterns.
And how so?
Point. Well, I take zero chances any longer. Every test I ordered is to make sure that every disease is ferreted out and nothing is left to chance, because I can't leave anything to chance. If there's a bad outcome, then I may be sued, and even though I've never been guilty of it.
And you haven't had to pay out a dime?
No, except for the fact that now I have to tell every hospital that I go to that, of course, I was part of these lawsuits. So it's permanently on my record, even though I didn't do anything wrong. I was dropped from the suits. But now it goes on, and it's just something that permanently alters practice patterns. Hmm. And I always say that if I have a choice, I will spend every last dime in the U.S. Treasury to protect myself from a lawsuit.
Elliot,
and
thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So, Rahul Parikh, in fact, you say that, in fact, doctors win the vast majority, or your studies suggest, your surveys of information, doctors win the vast majority of the cases that actually do go to trial and don't pay anything out. Nevertheless, as Elliot was just suggesting, this can have effects too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question would be would tort reform somehow change change the practice of defensive medicine, would and let me share a story with you, I guess, that might help put that in perspective. Not by me, but a colleague or physician in Nevada who helped spearhead tort reform. There was a mid-40s, a woman who was diagnosed late with skin cancer and metastatic skin cancer. And the reason she was diagnosed late was because the pathologist initially had misread the diagnosis, and so it spread. Now, the case went to court. The patient sued the physician. There are caps in Nevada now of $350,000 for non-economic damages, and it turns out that everybody went to court. The same process occurred. The woman actually didn't win the case, and the reason, even though the physician admitted to error, because the jury decided that they had heard rhetoric that physicians were leaving the state due to high malpractice premiums, so they ruled against the defendant. I guess the question is, ruled against the plaintiff. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is that do tort reforms really change the pattern of behavior of patients and doctors? And I'm not sure it does. I think one thing that would change the pattern of everything would be if we focused on patient safety instead of defensive medicine and tort reform. And that's being ignored in this debate.
What do you mean by patient safety? And I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to be brief.
Yeah, well, if you look at the IOM report, 100,000 people a year are injured from medical errors or killed or injured from medical errors. There are ways to improve patient safety that would really help to perhaps curtail medical malpractice lawsuits because we're keeping patients safe in the first place, preventing the problem in the first place from occurring.
And thereby reducing the number of errors and the potential number of lawsuits in the process.
Correct.
All right. Correct. All right. Thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rahul Parikh is a physician in Walnut Creek, California, the author of an op-ed in last week's Salon magazine. You can read his article on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, White House drug czar Gil Kerlikowske will join us to talk about the next phase of drug policy, plus Debbie Allen on the new Michael Jackson movie. Join us then. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.